You are listening to Stay Lifted, Sis, with your host, Devin J. Hall. We respectfully acknowledge that we are blessed by the land upon which we gather, live, and connect. It is the traditional and unceded territory of the Coast Salish peoples, specifically the Kwalin, the Ketsi, the Semiamu, and the Tawasin First Nations. I am super excited about this particular episode, and I always say that about every episode and every guest, but this particular guest is from my hometown, and I've never interviewed anyone from my hometown before. So I feel really, really lucky because it happens to be somebody that I really admire and respect and like, who is super awesome. Noel Bentley from TEDx, Surrey. Is that how you say it?
Yes. Perfect. Yes.
Hey, welcome to the show. So tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do with TEDx.
Okay. Yeah. TEDx, of course, is it's not as big as the Big TED, but it's a licensed event through them. So what we do is, I guess it was Bear Creek Park the last 3 years, and we got the ability to use the name of the big city, Surrey. And we have 1,000 people, hopefully again this year, at the Bell Performing Arts Center to watch 12 speakers. So it is a TED event. It's usually an all day or at least half day event where you get to see TEDx speakers. It's a huge process for us. Our speakers go through 4 or 5 months of coaching. We've just chosen them. And the event's not till the 19th of February. So we've got, the event also includes other things for people. Unfortunately, with COVID, we can't do everything we used to do in the past, but we will still have one or two performers and other things happening that you don't get to see when you Google them for TEDx performances online. So we always encourage people to come in person.
I'm excited because I look forward to the day that I get to do my first TEDx, or eventually, hopefully it'll be called TED by then. And it'll just be like a full blown TED event. But I'm also, it's funny because when I became a loudmouth brown girl, and we've talked about this, I did not intend to have my face out there. It was like a security reason that I had to kind of out myself and share my story and make sure people knew what was happening. But you and Jessica Houston really helped me to refine how I tell my story and what details I share and when I share those details. And I think that that's super important to talk about, because when we talk about sharing our stories, we're not talking about sitting around a bonfire and being like, so one time at band camp, we're talking about getting up on stage and being vulnerable. How do you get people comfortable with that?
Ooh, yeah. I mean, that's a huge question. It's a very important one. You're right. Because what we share about ourselves is very important. If we don't share anything, then it's hard to build trust with an audience. And often the stories and what we tell aren't going to resonate. But of course, as you mentioned, there's limits. How do you know? How do you know what's going to work? I think one of the keys is to always find some sort of common ground with your audience as best as you can, whatever it might be. It doesn't have to be super special. Often people, when they speak, they bond over the fact that they may have kids. They bond over the fact that they may have gone to a particular school. They bond over a particular experience that might be part of the event itself. So once you have a common ground, it's a lot easier to then take someone into the new space. And one thing I often ask people to do or to consider is to add some lightness or levity or even humor to allow a relax. It allows people to bond. It reduces the tension. Because later the tension's going to ramp up. Yeah. And that's a good thing, but we can't ask them to carry it the whole time. So there are a few techniques of, you know, finding that common ground with your audience and being able to bring people up to be able to let them feel more deeply again. So those are the two things I always stress for storytellers.
One of the things that TED does as an organization as a whole, whether it's a TEDx or it's a full-blown TED event period, is it puts a big spotlight on the people that are getting up on stage. Because if you have 1,200 people listening to your story, right, and then they go home and they each tell one person, that's 2,400 people who now know that you exist in the world. And you need to be prepared for that. So how do you prepare your storytellers for what happens after the actual getting up on the stage and the being the vulnerable and doing all the things?
Yeah, you know, that's fair. That's a fair question. And we actually, when people do have messages or stories that we know could be challenging for them to tell, we do speak to them about that right at the beginning to let them know that thousands of people will see this and hear this, and what if it's 10,000? What if it's 50,000? What we found usually is there's really a decision. People have to be ready to tell their story. They have made that commitment. And I've seen someone in the past that I was really concerned because what had happened to her was quite raw still, but it was important for her to tell her story at that time. So it is something you need to do upfront, absolutely. And we have to kind of get a little pushy because most people say, yeah, of course I'm ready. What happens is though, is in the application process, people do tell their story. We can see what happens when they tell it in front of a group of 20 people that they've never met before. And if there's a struggle, if there's challenges, you know it's not the right time yet. What we usually say is it's not the right time now, but next year it may be. And that is quite frequently because we can't have everyone that applies. So there are sometimes people who apply who actually, I think this year we have 4 people that were in the process last year, didn't make it. They're on stage this year. So yeah, it all has to be done up front. Otherwise, we don't want someone crumbling on stage. It's not fair to anyone.
Yeah, and that's a big thing, especially when, I mean, everybody who's listened to the show or who's been to the website, you all know my story. It sucks. It's terrible. It's, you know, filled with dragons and bullets and all kinds of terrible, horrible things. And so to translate that into something that I can speak about on stage in front of an audience who might live in the same city as me, might have similar experiences, but might not be able to fathom, like, holy crap, like I thought, you know, my stuff was difficult. I'm kind of on the extreme end of the spectrum. And so I can say that there's a lot of work that goes into, like, well, this is what I want to talk about. This is how I want to talk about it. And this is what I actually end up talking about in the final package. Right. And so I think that that's why it's kind of cool to be able to connect with you and hear from the back end, like, no, people don't just get up on stage and randomly spout verbal diarrhea about what they've been, there's like a process to it. And I honestly didn't expect that.
Yeah, fair enough. It is true. We do ask people, and it's interesting when people tell their story several times, often they can sort of, they kind of get used to it. Or they've told it enough to not realize that what may happen when they tell an audience. So we always, I think when we get into storytelling, what we often try and do is say, hey, you need to be able to put yourself in the space of the audience member hearing this for the first time. What will they experience? Because someone like yourself, Devin, has an amazingly important story that needs to be told. But how can you let people engage with it without them being overwhelmed? And that is the challenge. You do need to know the limits, and you do have to find that. And we do often, not test run, but yeah, people will tell their stories many, before they get on the TEDx stage, they've told it to other audiences and smaller audiences for sure, just to make sure it's landing the way they need it to be.
Yeah. And I really appreciated when we were doing the Story Share stuff that we went through it, because there was this period where I was like, I have this really beautiful, fantastical way of wanting to tell my story. And then I kind of sobered up and I was like, that will not make sense. Like that, like it would make sense to Noel because he knows me, but it's not going to translate well to an average audience of people who have no idea what I'm doing. Right. And then when I finally did it, I was like, yeah, that was perfect. Like it was exactly what it needed to be because we had taken that time to practice. Tell me how you got involved with Story Shares.
Well, yeah, Suri Shares, the woman, Jillian Glennie from Semiamu House, which is really Unity now. They've gone through their rebranding. So I had worked with Semiamu House, a Toastmaster group called Speaktacular out of there, and a few other projects. And Jillian decided, hey, we've got the opportunity for an amazing project that's going to be funded through the Government of Canada. I'd like to see what would happen if we pair storytelling with life skills coaching. And so Jillian's vision. She said, hey, Noel, this is what I have in mind. What do you think? And I probably couldn't say yes fast enough. I love the idea, and I had never really seen anyone do exactly what Jillian had been doing before. So yeah, great opportunity came because of people who we just happened to know.
I think it was really cool because I like, I brag about the fact that I'm the first certified cannabis coach in British Columbia or Lower Mainland British Columbia, which is amazing. I'm also the first mixed race woman to have published a book in Surrey, BC, which is freaking amazing. And although I have those accolades, right? And they're small time to some people, to me, they're massive. But learning how to tell my story in a group of people who were also learning how to tell their stories and having our stories be so completely different. Like some people's stories were about humor and others were about trauma and others were about just trying to figure out how to get from one day to the next. And then being able to hear some of those stories as we were getting to know each other was such a great experience. Like when Jessica called me, I was like, I'm in bed. What do you want? And we talked for about 20 minutes and she was like, this is perfect for you. This is exactly what you need. And you've said this and she said this, there was like a 180 degree turnaround between when I first met you guys to where I'm at now. Like I still struggle with mental health. I still struggle with putting myself out there, but because of being a part of Story Shares, I was able to kind of like resonate. What do I really want? What do I need? How do I want to tell my story? And that's such an important gift that you guys are giving to people in our community, because so many people in our community feel like they don't have the right to share their stories.
It's true. A lot of people are reticent, or if they don't feel they have the right, they feel that no one wants to hear it. Or often, strangely, people will say, I don't have any good stories. And I will disagree with everyone vehemently. We always say, and I probably said it to you and I probably said it to everyone, we're not necessarily looking for a Hollywood blockbuster story. If you have one, fantastic, let's do it. But if you don't, you'd be amazed how your stories will resonate with people. Who was it? Anna. Anna's story, and we'll have them soon, is deceptively simple at first, but it's absolutely beautiful in the way she tells it. Everyone has stories that absolutely resonate with other people, that other people need to hear and that people need to tell. What happens in the process of Surrey Shares is we often find the story that people end up telling, it changes very often. And that's fine. That's fine. We want to get to the one that you're ready to tell and know that you're ready to tell. Because we talked about that before. So yeah.
There is a story. One of the things that I loved about Story Shares was the voice, like the sound of people's voice as they started to get more comfortable sharing their story. And there was an English woman, I think it was, who shared a story about adoption and what that process was like and getting their first child. And the way that her voice, I actually laid on the couch and I closed my eyes and it was kind of like I was listening to a story about Neverland. Because it was just so well told that I was like, okay, let me just snuggle into this person's voice and picture everything that they were saying. And that was an experience because we were doing it through Zoom. I wouldn't have done that if we were sitting around a table, right? But just hearing her voice as she got more confident and talked about the beauty of like, well, we thought we were never going to get a kid. And literally we pick up the phone and there's our surprise of here is your present. Here is your brand new life. And it was just, I'm getting chills just thinking about it. And I can't wait to post some of them up on the site because, it was just such a cool experience to hear other people's stories. Is that what it's like for you?
It is. You mentioned it before. So if we have, say, what was it last time? Because we had two groups filming at the same time. So 13 stories. All of them quite different, all of them told with from the storyteller's, not just perspective, but personality, which is incredibly important. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful to have it. I love that because they're always different. The first time we ran it, I thought we were going to have three adoption stories out of like seven speakers, but two people changed their mind and then Pat came back. But yes, it absolutely makes a difference to allow people to express themselves. I love the idea when you said you closed your eyes and just listened to the story. I think very often, you know, those are things we don't do enough with stories, you know, to just be able to listen. Or even wilder can be if someone's a very good storyteller, can you turn off the sound and watch them and still be engaged by them? What are they doing to tell the story? Anyway, there's so much you can do, but we're all natural storytellers. And we're just trying to tap into that.
I remember being about 11, maybe 10, sitting in a group of, I think, maybe 15 or 20 girls. And we were just hanging out at a friend's house, all different ages. And we were sitting in a circle. And I don't know how it happened that we were like, let's sit in a circle and talk. But we sat in the circle and we started talking. And I called them my Korea girls. And I mean, I haven't seen them in like 30 years, right? But I'll never forget that night, because we just sat and we talked about our stories and we shared. And we didn't have a counselor. We didn't have any parents. It was just a group of teen girls being like, yo, life sucks. And we're like, not even 20 yet. Like, we've got a long way to go. And all these years later, I still wonder, like, where are they? What are they doing? And it was the power of sitting and just listening and hearing, like, you're not alone. And there are people who have been through adoption. They've been through trauma. They've been in a car accident, right? Life was going great. It was perfect. I won the freaking lottery. I bought a big house, married the best friend, had the kids. Everything was perfect. And then the lightning bolt struck and my life got blown up. How do you deal with that? And being a part of something that, where you get to say, hey, so you think your life sucks? Here are 12 people who thought their life sucked, and this is what they did. And maybe you can take something. It's a teaching opportunity. And so I feel like you're not just helping people tell their stories, you're educating. And I think that's such an important part that we miss out on when it comes to TEDx.
Yeah, it's true. There's always education portion. And like you said, the listening is critical. And someone had mentioned that in the last TEDx we just did. And it was great that he said, you know, we don't give people their voices. Everyone has a voice. It's important for us just to listen.
Yeah.
And that's critical. And I thought about what he said. And right. Yeah. Sometimes we do kind of think, oh, I'm giving someone a voice through this. No. We're just giving them the platform to use their voice. We want them to be able to reach deep down and say what they really need to say or talk about. But that can take time. As we said, it can take weeks. I mean, you have to build trust with the person with whom you're working, because ultimately you're probably going to be sharing something that you may not have shared before. And like you said, you know, be shared with other people. So hold on, I got to be ready for this.
Well, right. And I love the aspect of giving people that platform and being like, you've been through some shit, or you learned some stuff, or you did something amazing, or you did something no one else has ever done before. Let's celebrate that, right? Let's celebrate the ups and the downs and the all in betweens. Because I mean, like, we've been through a lot. We're in Canada and we had to deal with Trump. That was a lot. And then we had to deal with the pandemic, and that was a lot, and the isolation and all of the things. And so one of the cool things that Story Shares did was it brought us together every week, right? And it gave us the opportunity to be like, okay, this is rough. It was rough, and learn from each other. And I really, really love that aspect. Are there any stories or in particular storytellers that you think back on and you're like, damn, that was good? Like, that was pitch perfect. Everything went well. And I wish everything went like that all the time.
Yeah, it's interesting. Different storytellers also approach it differently. The first round, we had several people who memorized a 15-minute story, which is very difficult. And I didn't recommend it, but they did it. It's good for your brain, too. I mean, part of the thing
I've done that. And I found that I spent so much time memorizing the story that, like, because it was for sixth grade drama class, I got enough. And I was like, but I knew all the words. And my teacher was like, yeah, but you didn't move. You didn't look at the audience. You didn't connect with your audience. All you did was like, a monkey could have done this. And I was like, but I learned all the words. And I thought that was an achievement at the time, right? And it always reminds me, like, that was one of the things you taught me. Look into the camera, move around. When I did my story, I put my hands in my pocket. I let myself be comfortable and I moved my hands around and I did all of the things because I wanted people to be like, yeah, this story kind of sucks. It's traumatic, but hey, she's comfortable telling it, right? And that only happened because I was able to work with you and because you coached me.
Yeah, it's hard to really choose one because it's amazing what happened.
Mine was the best. One
Everyone
take.
Choose that.
One take. One take. In and out. Yeah. Got a driver and everything, and just got to sit and relax. Come on now.
There we go. Well, what that I love that like that that just and Jessica, you know, so I was out in the hall doing the hall duty, so I didn't get to see it till I watched it on video and loved it. And Pat is, as we said, is an amazing storyteller. Anna has a story that just completely caught me off guard. There's so many good things happening. It's hard to choose them. Now, what happens is someone will sometimes speak about something that is closer to you in your experience. So Pat was talking, of course, about adoption. And I'm adopted. So hearing that story from a parent's perspective, of course, it's something that is closer just because mm-hmm. there's an experience in my past and thinking, oh, is that, you know, picturing my parents? Or, yeah, so there's always, but my goodness, it's so hard to pick. There's really no favorites. What I loved is that everyone eventually, well, notice I'm avoiding that. You know what the key was?
It's not because he doesn't disagree, y'all.
But you know what? You know what it is? Everyone told their story like as themselves.
Yeah.
And that was what was critical. And the camera and audience loves that. But I mean that love that not because it's a performance. They love that because it's so much more meaningful. And it connects. You can connect through a camera. It's not that easy. But yeah, if you're putting on a performance, like you said, when you memorize those lines, it doesn't work. But it's taken so long because there's so many of them, but we're a couple weeks away from these videos being released. I can hardly wait to get these 13.
I'm so excited to watch them all and to see everybody's different stories, because again, like the group bonding part of story shares, like Jessica sent us an email and she was like, do you want to do this again? And I was like, yes, right now. I want to do it right now, right this second. And she's like, yeah, dude, you got to have to wait. And like let other people, and I'm like, no, I just had so much fun and getting to know everybody, and I'm excited to see what I know versus what they put on camera, right? And to see what the difference is. So are there any storytellers that make you cringe? And you don't have to name names.
Yeah. You know what? No one made me cringe, but usually what happens is when we start the storytelling process, we know that the people are guarded. They're not sure. They often have expectations of what we want from them, and then mm-hmm. have to sort of break things down, and we actually have to unlearn. Here's the thing that does happen for sure. I don't cringe because I know it's going to happen, and I do it myself. I'll be clear. When you first write your story, it's a book report. It is a bunch of details which are part of the story, but there's no life to it. It really is a recitation of this happened, then this happened, then this happened, and this happened. The emotion's not there. The sensory experience is there. Everything's missing that brings a story to life. And you realize that that's okay. We can go from there. But the words you use will change. Those details will all be there. You just don't have to say them. So that's the challenges early on. It's always, okay, let's get the structure down, because that's kind of the... It's important, but it's not, honestly, it's not as fun. Storytelling can be fun. It can be engaging, even when it is, even when the subject matter gets dark and very dark. And that happens for sure.
Well, and I was thinking about like comedians, like they, every single time they get up on stage and they do a set, that set is something they've done 100 times before. Mm-hmm. Right. The most famous comedians in the world have done it in Miami, New York, Delaware. Like they've done it everywhere. So everything from their facial expressions to the way they move to when they cross the stage, all of it is a part of the storytelling process. And it's all rehearsal for the next show. Right. And we don't often think about that when we're talking about online and content creation. 90% of the time, people who are doing online content creation aren't like, let me practice me saying this video 15 times. They go online, they go on live, and they just say what they're going to say. And that's great. That works. It's great for marketing, right? But when we're talking about telling a story, that's very different. And I think that that's the important part of being creatives is, first of all, what medium are you using? If you're painting, are you doing a series of paintings? If you're doing a video vlog, are you doing a series of vlogs? What's the theme? What is all of the things that you want to put into your story? So what are three important elements that you can think of when it comes to telling your story?
Yeah, telling your story, you're right. It has to be, there has to be a meaning. It has to be meaning, it has to matter to you. if it matters to you, and I mean really matters to you in some way, it probably matters to some other people too. You can build that connection. And so I always tell people, it's remember, it doesn't have to be exciting, but just tell me what's important for you to talk about. What's the story you need to tell? And we'll go from there. And 9 times out of 10, that's exactly the story that they end up telling. Always stress to people that the senses are incredibly important. What you hear, see, smell brings it to life because you want the audience to experience it as well. You know, and you can, what you choose for the details is critical. And in fact, once you get really good at storytelling, and like you said, at practice, you leave a lot of details out. What happens is the audience fills it in as you go along. They don't, and you use a lot less words than you think you need. And the audience is far more engaged. They're filling it in. Their brain's working. They're with you. And it's it comes to life. It's just more fun. It's amazing how the pauses and the spaces and the silences and what the other things you do create the story rather than being words. A lot of people think more words equals better. And that is, I think that only matters if you're getting paid by the word. And we don't work that way. I always say to people, great, go ahead and write it out. But you know, if it's 1,000 words now, it'll be 750 by the end or 600. And people are aghast.
Yeah.
What? I can't.
I know. When people tell me, they're like, you should make your blog post shorter. I'm like, no, no, there's no debate. No, because it's a different medium, right? It's like when you're on my blog, you're reading what I want you to read. If you don't want to read it, stop reading. I don't care. If I'm on stage, though, that's your time. You have paid to be here. And so it's my job to do things a little bit differently. And so that's another thing that I like about the story shares thing is that like, that's a totally different medium than what I do with Loudmouth Brembo.
Right.
Completely. And so it's a brand new skill set that I now have to redevelop and refine so that I can do it again and again and again and again, which I'm excited about. Preparing to tell your story. So we went through like 1,500,000 gazillion different iterations of what my story was going to look like and how I was going to tell it. And it was not a comfortable process. I didn't like it. And that's not your fault. I don't like being repetitive. And again, we've been talking about this, that in preparing to tell your story on stage, you have to repeat it.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about how you get comfortable or you teach people to be comfortable in preparing to share their story.
Yeah, you're right. It this happens, I think, to all storytellers, speakers. It gets a little boring. And mm-hmm. That's an understatement. I tire of my talks very quickly, but try to explain to people what happens. At the beginning, it's exciting because you're telling your story first few times, you're trying different versions of it, and then you got a lockdown. Okay, I know exactly what I want to say. Now I have to practice it. And that gets boring. And there is... But I let people know that there's something magical that can happen and usually happens if you practice enough and allow yourself to, each time you practice with purpose, do it like you're doing it properly. At some point, you get to the point where you have internalized your story. Now, I wouldn't say it's called memorization. It's way better than memorization. What it means is that you know this story so well, or you know this talk so well, you can kind of almost start from anywhere. If you're literally in a mall, and your friend bumps into you and goes, oh, hey, Devin, I remember your story that you told? Well, you know, I'm just meeting with a group of Toastmasters over here and we're starting in 5 minutes. Can you tell your story? Your answer would be, absolutely. Can hardly wait to do so. And you'd go
in. No, it wouldn't. You know that would not be how that conversation would go. Like at all. I'd be like, yeah, cool. Peace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An internalized story or an internalized talk actually gives you that confidence that you can go in and do it. But what it means is you probably presented it 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times in front of people. You practice it 100 times mm-hmm. and it's now just part of you. And it always comes out a little different, but it just flows. You almost don't realize that you're telling it. You're right. You're starting to focus more on the audience and what's happening there. It's really a challenge to get there. It's one of those things that when it's happening, you start to realize it's happening. It's like with anything like an athlete, when they're in the flow, when you're doing anything that it's becoming a different state of consciousness as you're performing it. That's when, you know, I've got this. This is where it needs to be. And it pretty much stays with you almost forever. then once you get it. So that's kind of the goal. And it takes a while, but I did see a couple of the storytellers that memorized it start to get there, where I'd have their script and all of a sudden they were changing words. The words were still perfect. They just weren't the memorized words and it still worked. And that told me that now they really knew their story. They were living their story as they were telling it, not just reciting it. That's the goal for every speaker.
I went in completely certain, like, this is the story I'm going to tell. And right. We practiced it and then we changed it. And then we practiced the original. And then I got there and I was like, okay, well, here I am. This is what I am, right? I'm broken teeth. I'm stressed. I'm PTSD. I'm anxiety, but I'm also X, Y, and Z. That's positive and happy and healthy. And, I didn't know how many takes I was going to do it in. I thought there would be like two or three. And Jessica was like, no, that's perfect. Like, just leave it as it is. And I went, oh, okay, cool. So I can just go then.
It happens. There were a couple people that had sort of a one take this time through, or it was very close, and some other people didn't. You never know what's going to happen on the day. You really don't. You just have to be open to whatever.
Yeah. Are you you coming to the meetup next week or this weekend?
I have a celebration of life.
Oh.
I'll be downtown.
That really sucks.
It
sorry to hear that.
Yeah, we knew it was coming, but fair enough. And so, yes,
what a perfect place to tell some stories.
It's true. Celebration
funerals
of life.
And weddings, best places to tell stories because both have alcohol and both have stories that get more and more elaborate as the evenings go on.
I love that you said that. And it's true. It's very true. I tell when we're coaching speakers in TEDx, we often, they're very reticent to use humor or lightness. It doesn't have to be jokes. I just mean something to lighten and to bring people up so we bring them down again. And I always tell them, have you been to a celebration life? Yes, of course I have. Did you laugh? Were there stories that made you smile? Yes. So your talk, you are less funny than a funeral. Is that how you want to be known?
Yeah.
Like, really?
Well, and it's funny because when I tell my story, people are like, oh my God, that's so horrible. And how did you survive? And I'm like, you get why I'm laughing, right? Like, I'm laughing because I survived. I'm still here. And I think it's hilarious that, like, I was 13 and I told the universe to throw everything they could at me and I would survive. I'm 38. I have now done this. Now, that being said, at 38, I'm a little more worried than I was at 13 because at 13, it was a lot more adventurous. At 38, I'm like, little older, little wiser, probably wouldn't challenge the universe that way.
Right.
Yeah. Things change as you get older.
It's true. It's true. You know, your laughter laughter has power with it. It implies that you have taken control in some way of the situation.
I don't know if I ever told you this, but I went through something that was awful, like just awful. And in the middle of it, I started laughing hysterically. And everyone was like, why is she laughing? And I'm like, because I'm smarter than you. Like, I'm going to get through this. I'm going to survive this. And I'm not going to survive it by crying and screaming and yelling. I'm going to do it by laughing. And it worked. It did what I needed it to do. And I still think back to that moment and I'm like, whoa, that was really weird. It was weird, but it worked. Right. And if I were to go into detail, people would be like, that's horrific. And I'm like, eh, but I survived. Right. And so that's the other thing that I think that is powerful about stories is it's not just giving people space to share what they've been through. It's not even just giving them space to talk about the things that are heavy on their heart. It's also giving them space to remember, like, but you survived, right? Yeah. Like, you were in a car accident and you lost both your legs and what was left of your body urinated all over your stomach, but you survived. And you grew wings and you've become something else, right? And I think that's the part that we don't often think about when we think about storytellers is that, like, hey, cool, look what I did. I did this thing nobody else has ever done. And I think that anybody who fosters that in storytellers is an angel. So thank you very much. I appreciate your existence.
Well, thank you. It was awesome to hear your story and work with you. It's been very meaningful. And that's the thing that's probably been most amazing about Story Shares is how much the coach gets out of it. And very few people mention that. But coaches, I think the great coaches that I've met have some gratitude and they work with people and you walk beside them rather than in front of them. And only rarely, as you know, only rarely do we walk behind you so that we can give you a little nudge. Or a bit. Sometimes it's a push out of the plane, but you know, it happens.
So we've spent a great deal of time talking about your experience. And I will say that when we first met, my first thought was like, ugh, another white dude. Like, he's not going to get my story. He's not going to get my background. He's not going to get all of the things that make me who I am. And I think that your experience in helping people tell their stories is a testament to why us working together worked, because like you already came in knowing that I had my stuff to deal with, right? And that I had my walls up and that you were going to have to earn my trust. And you did that beautifully, I might say. But let's talk about what happened when you first started telling your story, because you weren't always like builder of TEDx. You were not always a coach helping people share their stories and pull out the educational nuggets. You were just a person at one point who wanted to tell their story. So let's talk about how you got started before we talk about how you transitioned.
Yeah. How did I enter into the more of the speaking, the story world? I guess it was about, I'm just looking, it's about 12 years ago. I was a miserable public speaker. I had a good series of atrocious failures and minor failures. And I was the type of person that couldn't speak in front of people without my heart racing. Like really, it was incredibly uncomfortable. So I 8 years before that, I'd gone to a Toastmaster meeting as a guest. And I enjoyed it. It was terrifying, but it was actually fun too. So then if we do go back and realize I was only 8 years later, because I'm slow, I decided, all right, I'm going to go to Toastmasters. I want to do it, but I'm going to find a fun club. So I looked them up online and said, who has fun? So I'm going to go there because I enjoy humor. And that was the ability that, because it's a space that allows you to fail and you'll pick each other up and you tell each other, hey, here's what you did right, by the way, because we rarely hear that. You go, oh, okay. So critiques can be positive too. That was really the step. And then using humor really helped. So I'd always use humor as a coping mechanism. That became the way to speak. And the big, you know, it just, there's levels upon levels that you have to realize. So you go, okay, now I can speak in front of people. Oh, I have to learn how to speak without notes and raise my eyes. Oh, I have to do this. So there's this constant learning. And, you know, you love it. You enjoy the what you do well. Then realize you can do so much more. But I think that biggest leap was when it took me the longest time to go, okay, it's about what the audience experienced most. And that took, from the time I understood that to the time I really understood that, it even took a couple of years. It's a strange thing to put your ego aside. It's very hard as a speaker to do that. And that's when you switching to coaching became a lot easier too. Because now the focus is, how do we help this person connect with the audience and what do they really need to see? And it's still learning. Still got so much to learn, so much to learn.
There is a certain degree to what you do that is a little bit life coaching, right? And a little bit like identifying what are people struggling with and how does what I know fit into what they are capable of doing, right? And I think that that's the part for me that I'm like, okay, I have my cannabis certification, but am I ready to take on clients and put their health in my hands? No, absolutely not. Which is why I'm prolonging my studying. So I don't have to do it right away. What made you decide to go, okay, I started with Toastmasters. I started sharing my story and doing the public speaking. Huh, maybe it's time I start teaching people how to do what I've already learned.
Yeah, I think what happens is you do realize that you have to be able to listen to people better, and that coaching is about doing what helps them accomplish what they want to do. And you also mentioned a good thing is you actually have to know when you're now in a space that you're not prepared for. So there have been a couple of times with storytellers, and I don't even think with Suri Shares, which is strange, but with other storytellers, what I realized is you're not ready to tell the story. You're not ready. It's okay. You can get there, but it's not the time to tell the story. Your reactions and how you're telling it is indicative. And having the comfort with someone to be able to tell them that and understand why, I think that's a big part of becoming comfortable with what you're saying is you can enter into situations that are very uncomfortable where people are going into spaces that they didn't expect to go. And I did learn once that I sort of almost kind of jumped the gun with someone. They wanted to tell a story about something. And I had to phone them back and say, you know what? I'm wrong. I was just so excited that it was something that I wanted to hear, but maybe this isn't right for you yet. But let me know if it is. And as Jessica and I always say, we're not therapists. So we always we try and be clear and set expectations. So, hey, if you need something, if someone needs help in a particular way, we'll help you find it. But please don't come to us because we don't want to misrepresent ourselves. So I think we got good at just saying, this is what we do, but we are connected to others that we probably-
I actually called Jessica and I was like, so you're going to be my business partner. And she was like, what? Like, that was her response. And I went, no, seriously, one day you're going to be my business partner. Because the way that her brain works, right? And the way that my brain works, I'm just like, I love you and I need you in my life in whatever capacity. I don't care if you're my friend or my life coach or whatever. I just need more of you. Because she just has a way of making me go, okay, think about it this way, right? And sometimes you need that. And I will say that I'm a little miffed that I can't take the Sari Shares program for the rest of my life. But that's just, it's one of those things when you find something that works and that makes you happy, you're like, I want more of it. Right. And I need more of it. Tell me a little bit about your specific job for TED.
Yeah. So I'm a bit of an oddball in this sense that I'm the host for TEDx, which means, and I am the MC, but TED doesn't call them MCs. I don't think they like that word. So I host. So the onstage show, I host it, and it's my job to introduce and to guide the whole process. And, but like we said, it's to make sure that I'm doing everything I can so that the audience enjoys the show. And I love it. So, you know, when we did it on stage 2 years ago, it was an 8-hour process and the adrenaline's just going the whole time. And it's terrifying and it's fun and good things happen and things go wrong. And I think what it is it's a really good match for who I am and both my skills, my personalities, my strengths, and it matches my weaknesses. So what I'm not very good at, I don't have to worry about too much. But I did learn that from the first time. The first one from Bear Creek Park, I did not do a good job as the host. I did some things good, but other things were really poor. But that's fine. I learned.
But that's the thing though, is that again, like when you're telling your story and you're putting yourself out there, it's not going to be perfect the first time. It may not even be perfect the 10th time. It's the act of choosing to continue to put yourself out there that matters. That's the part that's important.
It is. I do some coaching within the TEDx as well. This year, I'm specifically only going to help speakers with humor because it's something that's very often not in people's TED Talks, but it's critical. Almost all of the most watched TED Talks, there's some funny. But there's they've got really serious, important messages, but they know how to work it together. They're brilliant. The coaching in Big TED is brilliant.
See, that's the part for me, because I'm like, I want to go do TEDx one day, right? And I have a plan for like when I want to get things done and how I want to get them done. And sorry, my phone keeps going. Today, my phone never rings because I know you, I know Jessica, I know my mom, I know my neighbor. 4 people. Today I'm recording and there's like 800 people trying to get a hold of me today. It's weird. But one of the things that I'm curious about is when you first started like talking, when you first started doing your very, very first public speaking engagements, did you ever think one day I'm going to be doing this massively huge event with thousands of people watching and like, what was that like when you first realized, oh, okay. Cool. So I did this so I could become a better speaker. And now I'm, you know, 10,000 people listening to me.
Yeah. You know, it was Toastmasters where I got my first taste of that. They have contests. And what I ended up in my third year of doing speaking was in front of 400 people telling a humorous talk. And that was absolutely terrifying. Absolutely terrifying, but it worked well. And you graduated up to it. So that broke the ice. But every time you do, until you get used to it, it is a terrifying thing. But I think I've learned to embrace it and realize that, except for rare situations, the audience wants you to succeed. So they want you to do well and they want to enjoy their time there. So if you put in the work and prepare, it really shouldn't go wrong. And here's the other thing I've learned by some of my past history is that I'm okay with embracing chaos. And that's a hugely important thing to be able to do. And I don't mean it flippantly. I mean, when things go wrong, it's the chance to actually have some fun. It's the chance to actually, you know, do something, unless it's tragic. Don't get me wrong. But for instance, live on stage, there's still about 800, 900 people left in Bell Performing Arts Center. Last speaker, I look over, I just introduced him, and you can't see because it's all dark and the lights are on you. And I look over and he's not there yet. They didn't mic up his guitar in time again. And so everyone's looking at me. You can't like just pause. So you launch into a 3-minute thing on that I had prepared. It didn't come off the top of my head.
So let's go back to, say you've got a speaker in a chair. They've lost their legs. They've lost their arms. They've lost their eyes. The tragedy is enormous. What do you say to them to not only get them comfortable, but also to pull out that humor? Because funny shit happens after tragedy. Like, I've been through some tragic stuff and I laugh about some of it. And I'm like, whoa, wow. Like, of all the people in the world, I went through that. Interesting, right? So how do you pull out that humor side of things that really are sometimes horrific stories?
Yeah, I think what happens is when people are telling their stories, as you get used to hearing people tell their stories, you hear something and you say, can you tell me more about that moment? You know, they might say, oh yeah, I went to the doctors and I couldn't believe what the doctor said to me. And, you know, well, tell me about that. What did the doctor actually say? And that might be the humor moment where the doctor said something so ridiculous that he or she laughed, or they can laugh about it now because it was so unbelievably stupid for someone to say that.
I actually think that's funny because I remember one time my family grew up in poverty, not because my mom didn't work her butt off, but because life, right? And so I remember telling my mom one day, like, I'm really hungry. And she goes, yeah, I'm going to go grocery shopping tomorrow. And I kind of just sat there and I waited for her to figure out what she just said. And it took a couple minutes and she went, yeah, I guess that probably doesn't help you tonight. Right. And so like, it's stuff like that, like little moments, like, great, cool. I will eat tomorrow. Thank you. What is one piece of advice that you have for somebody who's thinking about telling their story and who thinks that their story is important, but doesn't necessarily think their story is going to be important to anyone else?
Yeah. I find that if you've experienced something, there's a really good chance that other people have as well, or at least to some degree, or have a similar situation or something. There's something they can connect to. One of the things happens is often people are reticent to share their stories. So we don't hear them. So we don't realize that other people were just waiting for you to tell your story. So there could be 20, 30, 40 people, or 50 or 100 people in an audience of 1,000 who've been through something very similar, but they've never told. And so you're just kind of waiting for someone to break the ice. And once someone breaks the ice, you notice all of a sudden the flood happened. You know, someone. I noticed that after I will give a talk about something that's, you know, pretty serious, pretty deep, whatever it might be. Maybe it's about mental health or whatever it be. There's always someone who comes up to you after, if not a couple, and say, thank you for telling me that. What happened to me was. And they've got a story that's beautiful or interesting, or you know, you needed to hear. I think that's my favorite part of public speaking, is that moment after where someone absolutely has to tell you their story. They're bursting. They're literally bursting. And those are some of the most beautiful stories you'll ever hear are in those moments.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I've told various parts of my story to people and I've had people be like, yo, so that happened to me. And I'm like, oh, really? And that's always shocking to me because we tend to think like, well, no, I'm the only one. It's only me. It's all about me. The universe is just destroying my life, or the universe is just blessing me and nobody else. And then when we share those stories and we realize, no, we're not actually alone. And there are people that get all of the things that come with whatever the story is, it can change your life. because then you start looking at things differently. Well, like, if I'm not the only one, then what can I do to find others? And that in that will enrich my life in a way that is positive or healthy or uplifting. And I think that's really cool. What is up with TEDx? What's going on with that?
Yep.
When does that happen?
It will be February 19th. It's a Saturday.
Okay.
And it's booked for the Bell Performing Arts Center. So barring any massive changes in the COVID situation, I'm a reverse jinx. Who knows anymore? So that's the intention. As it is now, we should be able to open up the entire Bell Performing Arts Center. So we should have 1,000 seats available. Most likely will be an afternoon show. So we've shortened it to make it easier for people to attend the entire, to see 12 speakers. We just announced our 12 speakers yesterday. So soon on our website, you know, the TEDxSurrey website, we'll have their professional photos done in a week. You'll understand what their idea is. That will be posted and we'll start. The marketing's coming. So it's ready to rock and roll. I'll be the host. We'll have two energizers, which means that because the sets get kind of long, it's not that long. It's not as long as a short movie, but we make sure that people are able to at least stand up and stretch or do something active. In the past, we've had bongo dancing. I mean, that was awesome. We've had them 3 years in a row. We've taught people how to bongo dance. We've had like which Brubeck? Oh, the famous jazz musician. We had him send in one of his performances. We've had all sorts of things to add to the whole day. So we're looking forward to the 12 ideas are wonderful this year. There's one or two that I don't think people will see coming at all that are very different. I don't like spoilers, as you know. So I just want people to read the ideas, but really
I'm all about the spoilers. I'm all about like look into the future 10 years from now and tell me what Marvel movies are going to be made. Like I want the endings. I want the whole bit. Although I will say that I don't like them when they're given to me. I like them when I'm giving them. Right. I walked into Knives Out and somebody was like, so-and-so is the bad guy. And I went, it hasn't even started yet. Like it was kind of obvious that he was going to be the bad guy, right? Because he can't always be the good guy. But I was less than impressed. However, if I had been the one giving the spoiler, I would have been fine with that.
Right.
That wouldn't have bothered me at all.
You and Jessica.
We're two peas in a pod. She just doesn't know it yet. I'm going to be her Amy Farrah Fowler. That's my like my life dream is to just have Jessica with me at all times. What are some things that you can think of off the top of your head that is important when it comes to storytelling before we close off the day?
Yeah, I think we experienced this that, you know, your story, we always want when people tell stories that there's a reason, there's a point, there's a why to tell a story. And it can be whatever it is, as long as it's important to you. If you're an entertainer and you can tell wonderful stories and people love it, do it. If you need to share your story about something that happened with you, then find that audience so that you can get it out. Know why you're telling your story. And I realize that your audience wants to hear your story, but you have to do the right thing for your audience. Don't bore them to tears. Don't worry about whether it was 3 o'clock or 3:30. If you learn how to do your storytelling, it can be something your audience really appreciates. It is a give and take, because you're right. You mentioned that before. They're giving you their time. So why should they do that? Well, because you're telling them a story that they're glad to have heard.
And I will say that I'm a lot more of a snob now though, too. Because when people are talking to me, I'm like, hurry up. Like, I don't want to just tell me the gist. I don't want the play-by-play of every second of the conversation. And like, that is your fault because now I know how to tell my story differently. So I'm like, cool. So you need to tell me how many bites of that steak you took, or are you just gonna give me the bare bones? It's terrible. I'm awful. I'm a horrible human. I know this. Where can people find you on social media?
I do have noelbentley.ca, my website that has just been created. I'm just starting to populate with things. And apparently I'm on Facebook, according to the person who helped me. There's also no belly. Like there is more of a professional page that we're just getting. So yeah, I'm just getting rolling with that as well. And of course, TEDx Surrey. If you punch in TEDx Surrey, you're going to go right to the TEDx Surrey site. And then you'll see the big the big event there as well. And you'll be able to see some with some of the past speakers. You know, you'll be able to get an idea of what it's all about, and hopefully we'll encourage people to be involved with TED and TEDx, you know, in any way they can, just because it helps spread important ideas. So
I think it really does. And I remember when the first TED Talks came out and I was like, oh, big deal, not exciting to me. But then friend, mentor, kind of adopted dad, Orville Lee was in TEDx, and I was like, oh, now I'm interested because I know him personally, and I know like a little bit of his story, and I know what he struggled with and what he's faced and what he's been through. And so sitting back and watching him speak, and I'm like, huh, that's really cool. Like there was things that came out in that story that I didn't know. Right. And so it was pretty exciting to see somebody that I know and respect who's helped change my life up on that stage, and to know that I'm following in his footsteps is pretty amazing.
So, yeah. Looking forward to your TED Talk at some point. I know it's coming.
30 years from now. So tell you what, I'll do TEDx when I marry Christopher Evans.
Okay.
Since that's never going to happen, I'm not overly worried. Thank you so much for spending this time with me, and for everything that you have done with Surrey Shares. And ladies and gentlemen, make sure you check out Surrey Shares. Is it .ca or .com?
I believe it's CA.
Check out SurreyShares.ca because there's going to be some really great stories up there from some really amazing people in our community who just have the coolest stories. I think it was Oprah that said that every single person in the world has a story, and then all you have to do is open a phone book and point, and you will find somebody that has a story you wouldn't have expected. And I think she actually did a show about that in the 90s. And it was one of my favorite story shows, because it was just like, well, if everybody has a story according to Oprah, then I have a story. And that's really what Loudmouth is about sharing that story and inspiring other people to share theirs. So thank you for fostering that and for helping me figure out how to do it in an ethical way.
Yeah, it's been awesome to be able, I wouldn't say work. I wish I could find a better word, because it's not work. When you find something that's meaningful and something you enjoy and something that you think makes the world better, I mean, hallelujah. Yeah.
I'm not going to lie, like on the way there, because you guys generously grabbed me a cab so that I could get there and back. I remember sitting in the car and I was like, oh yeah. Yeah. Like one day this is going to be a black SUV, and it's going to be like, I'm going to be all over the place, and it's going to be amazing. And this is what I want. And I haven't really felt like that since I decided to do something with Loudmouth Brownville. And I was like, and it wasn't the car, it wasn't the driving there. It was the fact that I was going to share my story and put it on the record. That was the part that I was like, this is what I want. I want this. I want whatever comes with me getting to that place where I can continue telling my story so that I can open doors to tell other people's stories. And that's really because of two phenomenal people. And for those listening, yeah, they're both white and I don't give a crap. Like that's a big thing right now in race. And right, and well, white people can't help do this. And Loudmouth Brown Girl exists because of a lot of white people. And so I really, really appreciate that you are breaking barriers across racial boundaries.
Thank you. We appreciate that too. It has been awesome to be able to meet you and to, you know, for you to be part of this project. So, and we anticipate that you'll remain in some way connected to it.
Forever. You are never getting rid of me. Okay. We will be calling the RCMP being like, we need a restraining order. Like I am obsessed with you. I am obsessed with Jessica. It's never, ever going. Thank you for listening to Stay Lifted, Sis. You can check us out at loudmouthbrowngirl.com, or you can find us on all of the things. Make sure once again that you check out storyshares.ca, as well as TEDx Surrey and Vancouver and Burnaby and all of the things, because it's just an amazing project. And everybody that is involved, educators, teachers, comedians, all of them, actors, wonderful human beings who have something that you might want to hear or that you might learn from. So thank you. And don't forget to stay lifted, sis.